supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. At 10 this morning, students across the country left class to honor the 17 people killed last month at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Some 50 high schools in our area participated in the National School Walkout. WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Aaron takes us around the region on a day that was about both gun policy and the rising voice of a new generation.
Shortly after 10, Dominique Hammond and her friends climbed atop a fountain in Philadelphia's Rittenhouse Square to make an announcement. Only one problem. They couldn't quite figure out how to work the bullhorn.
Hello? Hello?
Okay.
Hundreds of Hammond's classmates from nearby Freire Charter School surrounded her in the park, about 500 in all.
Can I have your attention, please?
They'd marched to Rittenhouse as part of a school-sanctioned protest. Using chalk doled out by teachers, they'd written the names of friends and loved ones lost to gun violence. Afterwards, they were supposed to walk the few blocks back to school, but Hammond and a group of her friends had another plan.
If y'all participating, we want to have a march to 15th Street so that way we can spread the word a bit more.
It was unclear if anyone had heard them, but Hammond wanted her classmates to follow her about six blocks over to City Hall. They'd been talking all week in classes about their personal connections with gun violence, which were numerous. Freire's student body is overwhelmingly low income and almost 95% African American. The students told teachers they resented the fact that it took a shooting at a suburban high school in Florida to spur action.
Why did it take so long for everyone to care, especially here in Philadelphia when, you know, there are a lot of people that were shot and killed and, like, they were cared about for like a day or so, and then everyone just stopped caring.
In eighth grade, one of Hammond's friends died in a shooting. Junior Nafir Royal lost an uncle. He finally feels he has a way to fight back.
Teenage activism is our most vital weapon right now in our society. This is why things like this are extremely important.
As the Freire students marched back towards school, they chanted a defiant message.
We had it too! We had enough! We had it too! We had enough!
Soon the students approached a turnoff point. They could either head back to school as expected or march on to City Hall. It was a crossroads between the protests they were supposed to have and the protests some of them wanted to have. And as the choice dangled before them, dozens of Freire students spontaneously flooded the downtown streets. As they filled the blacktop, they cheered, rejoicing at the discovery of their own power. Hundreds marched on to City Hall, linking up with other students from other schools along the way. Junior Kevin Scott was among the marchers.
We knew in our hearts that we had to do it, man. It's something that we had to do, and I'm just glad that we did it together.
Wednesday's protests were officially about gun control, but the story across the region was as much about young people stretching their voices and finding their place in the world.
We have the right to freedom of speech, and we have the right to protest.
Ninth grader Mayim Barsaid participated in a rally outside Lower Merion High School in suburban Philadelphia.
We have the right to walk out and speak our minds.
Lower Merion Superintendent Robert Copeland said the day reminded him of his generation's protests in the 60s and 70s.
We had our time to make a speech and make a stamp on the society, and these kids have the right to do the same thing.
But not every student felt heard Wednesday. Despite the fact they were discouraged by their superintendent, about 100 students from the Caesar Rodney School District near Dover walked out to the school football field. Afterwards, they were directed to a town hall with local legislators who spoke mostly about their support for gun rights. Senior Rachel Ewald was not impressed.
I think nothing was accomplished here. We definitely just sat there. It was just kind of like, oh, here's why I did this, and here's why I didn't do this, and it was just a lot of deflecting.
Books not bullets!
Books not bullets!
Books not bullets!
Books not bullets!
Back in Philadelphia, the protests came in waves, finally subsiding around one. When it was all over, Dominique Hammond stood in the hallway at Freire High School and jittered with joy as passing classmates congratulated her.
Thank you!
Hammond said she isn't usually the activist type. The plan for an alternative protest came together over just a few days of conversations.
So, you know, it was like a last-minute thought, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm not sure if this is going to work. And then today came, and it worked, and I'm so proud of myself.
When the day started, she couldn't figure out how to work the bullhorn. Now, her voice seemed louder, stronger, almost as if she didn't need one anymore. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
The focus on gun violence continues 1 week from Saturday, when thousands of participants gathered along Pennsylvania Avenue in the nation's capital will take part in the March for Our Lives rally, planned by survivors of last month's school shooting in Parkland, Florida. Among those in attendance, Movita Johnson Harrell, who's for years worked both in Philadelphia and nationally to build a grassroots movement to rid our streets of illegal guns. She currently serves as Victims Services Director for the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. Mo, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on, Mr. D.
Tell us about plans to attend this rally in D.C.
So, you know, we do a bunch of work nationally and here in Philadelphia to help survivors and co-victims of gun violence and also to help curb the gun violence. So the district attorney here in Philadelphia has been so generous as to offer two buses for victims and victim advocates to go to the March for Our Lives rally on March 24th in Washington, D.C. So we have two buses leaving out of the DAO at 7 a.m. on Saturday the 24th.
Your background is in part in social work. You currently go into schools to discuss with children gun violence and ways to be out of harm's way. And for you, it's also personal as well, having lost a son in 2011.
Yes, it's very personal. My son, Charles Andre Johnson, 18 years old, was murdered in a case of mistaken identity on January 13th, 2011, here in Philadelphia. And the two young men who murdered my son were actually 23 and 25 years old at the time. They could not have owned guns legally because they had previous criminal arrest records. So one of the things I have strived to do is to educate our children to make better decisions other than picking up guns.
1999, Columbine. 2012, the horrific elementary school shooting at Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut. And now Parkland. Do you have cause for optimism that although there is all this energy around finally making a difference, we're not seeing much of it out of the nation's capital?
Well, I have optimism because a lot of those young people who are raising their voices in unity today will be voting tomorrow. A large part of the problem is that the legislators that we have in office aren't really voting to change the problem. The NRA has a huge grip on our legislation, and these children are noticing that grip, and they want change. They want to be able to go to school safely. They want to be able to live in their community safely. And these young people are unifying, and they're joining together, and they're moving the needle. I am absolutely hopeful.
A few years back, you considered a run for office, that for the 190th State House District. From this vantage point now, for you, is it easier to make a difference from outside the political system rather than within?
I don't think so. I think that we need to be creating our own grassroots candidates. We need to be mobilizing our communities. We need to be the ones running for these seats, for committee person, for ward leader, for city council, for state representative, because we need to be the ones, we are the ones worried about what's happening in our communities. So I think there needs to be a combination of both inside as well as outside of government. I see myself as being willing to make the change anywhere that I can.
What are some other efforts or groups that champion the cause that you so fervently believe in?
There are groups like Ceasefire PA and Mom Demands Action and Every Town for Gun Safety and Heeding God's Call to End Gun Violence. These organizations are out here every day making a difference. I work with them all, and they're doing amazing work.
Do those organizations recognize aspects of the Second Amendment, using a gun for hunting, say, and or for protection?
Absolutely. I used to be a legal licensed to carry person. This is not an amendment, a Second Amendment fight. The NRA keeps using that argument. This has nothing to do with the Second Amendment, but it has everything to do with our children's constitutional right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We are not trying to take away people's legal rights to have guns. What we are trying to do is make sure that guns should not be in the hands of domestic abusers. Guns should not be in the hands of people with mental illness. Guns should not be in the hands of people with criminal records. Guns should not be in the hands of children. So what we're trying to do is protect our community.
Movita Johnson, Harrell, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you so much, Mr. D. I'll talk to you soon.
Movita Johnson Harrell is the Victims Services Director for the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. Neighborhood change happens fast. In a matter of decades, Strawberry Mansion went from being one of Philadelphia's wealthiest neighborhoods to one of its poorest, from being predominantly white to majority black. Now it seems poised to change again, and black residents are wary of being pushed out. In a collaboration between Keystone Crossroads and Plan Philly, Jen Kinney reports on a neighborhood in flux.
How you been? I've been good. What about yourself?
Tanetta Graham is walking around Strawberry Mansion, a neighborhood she's lived in all her life.
All right. Take care. All right, love you too.
And if it's going to gentrify, she wants to make sure existing residents aren't left behind. After college, she could have left for good, but instead, she moved home.
And I just made a decision. I made a decision that I was going to stay in Philadelphia and that if I wanted to stay in Strawberry Mansion, that I was going to just help make it better.
This was at the height of the crack epidemic, and she got a job teaching at the neighborhood high school. By this point, Strawberry Mansion had gone through many transformations. It's right next to Fairmount Park, with easy access downtown and to the suburbs. It had been a wealthy Jewish neighborhood until the 1940s. When many white families left for the suburbs, black families, like Graham's, were able to purchase houses, cheap.
My grandmother was one of them. She did day work for a Jewish family that owned the house that she eventually bought.
Now that housing prices are beginning to rise in the neighborhood, Graham isn't afraid of those changes. She just wants to make sure those families can keep their homes and benefit from all the good things that more wealth could bring.
So, like I said, this is a new salon. That's pretty new. This used to be a restaurant. That's a misconception that a lot of people have. Like, oh, they wanted to say the same. We don't. We want to see growth and development. We want to see restaurants or eateries. We want quality schools as well. We just don't want to be planned over.
That fear has been alive in the neighborhood a long time.
This thing in Strawberry Mansion that I grew up with was they're coming. They want the neighborhood back. They was never really defined, but you know that was the term. Well, they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. And we kind of saw some of those things happening in neighborhoods next to us.
You said it was never really defined who they was, but like, who did you think that it was?
White people. That's what it was, white people.
White people. That's me. I moved to Strawberry Mansion a little over a year ago. My roommate, who owns the house, was the first white person on our block in decades. Here's our neighbor, LaTanya Reed, describing our arrival.
So the block was just like, oh my gosh, like we're being like integrated. What is going on? And I was like, the gentrification is happening. And they're like, what is the gentrification? And I'm just like, so I had to explain the whole thing to them and why they shouldn't panic. Because it was just like, okay, pardon my French. It was just like, oh my God, these white girls are moving in. These hippie white girls and her dog. And they were just sitting out on the porch drinking beer. And I'm like, but we all sit out on the porch drinking beer.
Hey, come here. What's going on?
Now, to say Strawberry Mansion is gentrifying might seem like a stretch. It's long been one of Philadelphia's poorest neighborhoods. But housing prices are shooting up fast in neighborhoods nearby. And slowly, development pressure is creeping over to Strawberry Mansion.
It's a very quiet block. The people are very friendly.
That's Damaris Walker. He only moved to Strawberry Mansion 9 years ago himself and started buying properties.
The houses are very large, and they have so much a character. It was like, I love it at first sight.
Walker sold my roommate our house. Now he owns 5 on our block alone. Most of our neighbors have been there for generations, so even though Walker is black, his purchases raised eyebrows, especially when he sold to a white woman.
There were African Americans who I hope would buy it, and some didn't qualify for the mortgage. The saddest part to me was that there were people who I thought should give the neighborhood a chance who looked like me, who had sort of written it off because they thought the price was too high for the hood.
Graham knows people outside the neighborhood, black and white, were bound to see Strawberry Mansion's great qualities sooner or later.
But one thing that we have to make sure that they do see is that homeowners are still here. So you may see the vacant land, you may see a lot of the rundown buildings, but you also, there are also some homeowners that have stuck through all of those transitional periods and are not going anywhere.
More than a decade ago, seeing change on the horizon, Graham and other residents founded the Strawberry Mansion Community Development Corporation. She became its first president. She thought the neighborhood needed an organization to protect and advocate for existing residents.
We know that our strength is in our homeownership. They don't value our houses at much, but we do own them.
But protecting homeowners is tricky. Graham gives an example. Say the city values your home at $20,000 and a developer comes along and says he'll pay $60,000 for it.
For someone who's uneducated about what's going on, you think, I'm going to get over because I'm going to make a, what, $40,000 profit. But in actuality, if you get that 60, where are you going to be able to purchase another house? If a lot of us fall for that, then you're not going to have the opportunity to come back to a neighborhood.
Some amenities are in the process of returning to Strawberry Mansion, too. There's a private preschool, an environmental center, and eventually Graham thinks banks and grocery stores will also return. When they do, she wants to make sure they're for current residents, not just future, wealthier, and probably whiter ones. For Keystone Crossroads and Plan Philly, I'm Jen Kinney.
For more on gentrification in Philadelphia, find our series at whyy.org. And if you have a story to share, find us on social media or call 215-928-2408. Again, 215-928-2408. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.